Let me introduce you to our latest sponsor, the Andre Law Firm. Andre Law can represent you or your business in a variety of civil and commercial matters. Do you have a client that has proven difficult to collect from? Andre Law also specializes in collection law and can expedite your collection on judgments from your defaulting clients. The principal of Andre Law Firm is Tony Andre, a North Miami native with years of experience representing businesses and individuals throughout the state of Florida. Based in Aventura, you can give him a call at 786-708-0813 or visit his website at andrelaw.com. Again, give Andre Law a call at 786-708-0813 to set up your consultation.
Welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry, a podcast covering the Miami Dolphins and the NFL. Now, here's your hosts, Chris, Alf, and Simon.
And we're on, and welcome to another edition of 3 Yards Per Carry. I'm Alfredo Arteaga. Simon Clancy is not here because Liverpool won the EPL, and he's probably gallivanting about in London or doing something else. But Chris
Carter's got he's got Corona again.
Oh God. You think so? You think that's possible?
Doesn't leave.
No. But we do have Five Reasons Sports Network chief Ethan Skolnick, also chief. Host of the chief. Five on the Floor podcast. You don't like the term chief, Ethan?
I don't know. It depends how it's used. I mean, I get it sometimes on Twitter. It's like, yeah, nice tweet, chief. You know, it's it kind of depends on the context. I'll take it. It's not the worst thing I've been called.
Uh-huh. Would you prefer Commodore?
Yeah.
Maybe. Honcho. What about Five Reasons Sports Network? Honcho.
Poobah.
Is that okay.
Poobah. I don't know.
Poobah. Yeah. No. I do a lot of things for the network. Some days I'm not really sure what I'm doing. I have a new hamster in my apartment because. My daughter wanted one, and it just spins on a wheel all day, and it's me, basically. It's just me for Five Reasons Sports. It's just spinning on a wheel all day, but I'm in the same place. So
I think that's been all of us since March.
Pretty much.
Well, it's July, and usually...
Is it?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it is. It is July. I'm looking at right here at the corner of my screen, and it says 7/1/2020. That means July 1st, right?
My God.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, unless you're in Central America, because then that would be January 7th in Central America.
I'm going to say that it's April 92nd.
Okay. It's July, which usually means that we're just sitting around in the deadest of the sports year, waiting for nothing to happen for about a month until there's NFL training camp. But for whatever reason, the NBA decided to put a pause on their season, and they're starting up again. I don't know what that's about. But they're starting up this month. Optimistic that it happens, Ethan, first of all.
Well, yeah, because the money has spoken. And, you know, we're entering a period. I mean, we joke about it, that all this time disappeared. I mean, you know, the last day I feel like I was alive was at American Airlines Arena waiting for the season to end when, you know, Rudy Gobert, you know, tested positive and the news started to spread around the arena, and ushers were basically saying
to me, "Hey." And the Heat played probably their worst game of the season, too.
Well, that's the crazy thing. They didn't know about what was going on, but we did. So we kind of knew the game was meaningless, like by the third quarter, but the Heat played like it was meaningless because they dropped like a 25-point lead at home to Charlotte.
Yeah.
And they were totally dispirited. And then, you know, we were there, and the ushers were starting, you know, I turned to, you know, I know all the ushers at the arena by now and looked at them, and they're like, "We'll see you next year." And then Eric Spoelstra came out and met with us, and he's like, "I'm not going to take any questions about the game." And there were two comments about what happened that night with the virus, and we knew that was it for a while. Now, at that point, did I think we'd actually have basketball again? No, I did not. But what's happened here over the past 4 months is that the money has spoken, and it has spoken in different ways in different leagues. And I think an interesting conversation we could have tonight is the way that the NFL has approached it as opposed to the way the NBA has approached it, because the NBA, I think rightly so, has a reputation for being much more protective of its players than the NFL is. And I think in every conceivable way. And yet, even with that, although I believe that the NBA has the best plan, and we don't know the whole NFL plan yet, but, you know, I believe, and even Eric Spoelstra was on a conference call I was on today, and talked about how much thought had gone into the NBA plan. I think they're taking every possible precaution you can But it's sort of like Adam Silver, the commissioner, said, you can't outrun the virus. They just happen to run into a bubble in the heart of one of the worst states in the country right now, but they're going to be in a bubble. And so do I think it'll happen, Alfredo? Yes, because, you know, if it doesn't happen, as you and I both know, the revenue hit that league is going to take when everything is based on the playoffs and TV is enormous, and it affects everything because it's a cap league and it's a 50-50 split between the players and the owners. And if they don't play, like, the players can talk about all this other stuff that they're concerned about, and all of it is legitimate. COVID, being away from their families, wanting to devote more attention to social justice, the risk of injury because you're coming back in a weird situation and you may pull a hamstring or worse. They can talk about all of that. But they also don't want to see a 30% chunk of the salary cap go away.
Yeah.
And that's what's going to happen if they don't finish this season. And so I think that ultimately everybody came to their senses and said, I mean, we can say their senses or not, but they came to their senses economically and said, we have to play.
Yeah, I think it's conceivable
I just got a question, though.
Yeah, I'll mm-hmm. let you get in here for a second, Chris, but let me just say this right away. I think it's conceivable this could lead to a strike and the abolishment of the salary cap, and that could be a good thing in the NBA. Do you agree with that or no?
Well, it could be, but I think the bigger concern was that if they don't finish the season and they don't clear up the revenue shortfall, that basically the owners could throw out the CBA, and the players don't want that. Mm-hmm. And I think the only place where the NFL is better positioned right now than the NBA is the NFL has labor peace.
Yeah.
Now, it's forced labor peace because the players' union is a joke. But
D. Maurice Smith is just not good at his job.
Right. No, he's not Michelle Roberts. And so – and the players don't have power. They don't know how to exercise their power in the NFL the way that they do in the NBA. And they don't have guaranteed contracts, and they never will, for a variety of reasons. But I think when you look at the situation totality, I mean, you know, the one place that the NFL is in a stronger position than the NBA is that they have labor peace for the next 10 years. And so that gives you a little more flexibility. The NBA, although the two sides have worked together really well to make this thing happen, it blows up if the owners say we're tossing out the CBA. And then, you know, there was the chance that not only would you not have basketball this season, but you wouldn't have it next season either. Hmm. And even as strong as that league is, that league could not have recovered from that.
So let's assume they do have it. Let's assume they do go ahead. I mean, what's the carrot on this? Like, are they going to have, like, blowout highest ratings they've ever had? I mean, I kind of imagine they would.
I think so. I think the only thing, Chris, that I think is questionable here is, you know, they're playing at a totally different time than they ever played.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, they're starting this thing in August. August is typically, I mean, it's July 30th, but August. August is typically the 1 month with no basketball activity. Right. Mm-hmm. You have the finals go into June. July is, you know, the NBA owns the first 2 weeks of July. With, you know, it took that over from baseball. It owns the first 2 weeks because of free agency. Right. Draft into free agency. Then football typically takes over, you know, third week of July into training camp. But August is the dead period for the NBA. So this is it's training people to be interested in this at a different time. But most people are home. OK. They're going to be looking to stay in the air conditioning in certain places like where we live. And there's going to be NBA games all day, just like there are for summer league, except these count.
Yeah.
And they're with LeBron. They're not with, you know, a second round pick or an undrafted free agent. And so I do think there's a chance for it to be really big. I think baseball could have taken some of that audience if they started when they should have started and there was a little momentum built, but that didn't happen. Obviously, the NBA is going to dwarf the NHL. And then it just comes down to football. And then I'm sure some news we're going to talk about, which is, you know, the NFL, you know, scrapping the two preseason games, the first and the fourth, it looks like. So all these sports are going to be colliding at exactly the same time. And then maybe college football camps opening. We don't know. And so yeah. I'm not sure. But I will say, Chris, the one thing that was dramatic, the ratings for The Last Dance for the Jordan documentary were outrageous.
Mm-hmm. They were outrageous. Yes.
Yep. Yes. And well, and I mean, this is like a documentary. I mean, this is going to be like nothing you've ever seen. You basically have NBA players in the real world. It's going to be fascinating, and you're going to hear everything. And the NBA is, you know, again, there are things the NFL is better at, but the NBA in terms of engaging its fans does it as well or better than anybody, especially on social media. And they're introducing all kinds of new cameras, new streams. You're going to hear everything. It's going to be a totally different experience. So I do think the ratings, especially if you can get LeBron into the finals, Giannis into the finals, it's going to be pretty big.
Well, clear this up with me, because this is a basketball podcast. So, you know, I don't pay a lot of attention here and to the exact schedule, and I think a lot of our fans don't. They're going to start in July 30th, and the NBA is right. When do the playoffs start? Are they just operating playoffs right away, or are they?
No.
What's happening there?
So the teams are starting to report. For instance, the Heat report July 8th. So that was a week from today. They will basically, you know, have all a 3-week training camp. The Heat start August 1st, but some teams start July 30th. They will play 8 regular season games apiece, which, you know, most teams had between, I don't know, 15 and 18 games left. Yeah. So they're each going to play 8. The schedule
So about 2 weeks of regular season, and then they start in the playoffs.
Then they'll
so
then
they're
they'll
gonna
go
have
one through,
playoffs, one through 8 in each conference.
Yeah, playoffs are gonna be just as they've been, Chris. They're gonna be 1 through 8.
So the playoffs will start. Let's call this, August. I don't know, what do you want to say, 12th or something like that? So they're going to have about 2-3 weeks of playoff basketball going before the NFL is really even starting. So my question is given the likelihood of ratings bonanza with the NBA when they first come back, and especially as they go through playoffs, given the NFL has cut the preseason in half essentially, and so there's even less football to compete with basketball, and given the speed of the COVID virus, or the speed of the virus essentially, and how fast things develop, what are the chances that you think that the NFL could look at what's happening in the NBA, look at the ratings bonanza, and say, you know what, we don't need the fans in the stand?
I think they might say that. I think that they may decide, and I think that's one of the reasons why they've been a little slower with their plan than the NBA. I mean, part of it is the NBA was in the middle of a season and they would need to start again sooner because they got to get to the next season, which is probably going to be mid-December. But part of it, I think, is they're waiting to see how things play out with baseball and with basketball in particular. Mm. I mean, hockey is a different situation because they're going to be up in Canada in a country that's handling this better. And, you know, I think the NHL is going to be fine. But in the NBA, there's a lot of questions, and not just those questions, but also the stuff that the NFL struggles with more than the NBA, which is the social justice stuff. Mm-hmm. And you know, we have to see where we are with that because, I mean, the NBA has basically turned it over to the players. I mean, Black Lives Matter is going to be on the court. Okay, there's the reports that basically the players are going to be able to change their last names on their jerseys to a slogan if they want. I mean, the NFL is not doing any of that. I think that the NFL may look at what happens with the NBA and have it govern some of its decisions. Although I think politically the leagues are very different from each other, but I do think that they're waiting. I do think that, you know, we don't really see the NBA and the NFL compete directly in a lot of ways because the only times that they really compete, because everybody always says this, and I think it's true, the NBA season really doesn't start till Christmas. Mm-hmm. The first 2 months of the season, everybody's immersed in football. You know, by the time you get to Christmas, you know, half the teams in the NFL are eliminated, and a few more, it doesn't look like they have much of a chance. You know, so at least you've gotten to that point. You know, but the only time that I've ever felt that the leagues really competed was, I always dealt with this because I covered both the Dolphins and the Heat, which was NFL draft was always the first weekend of the NBA playoffs or the second weekend. And that's when you would see them collide. And of course, because the draft is so big, the draft would win. But in this case, you know, the NBA is getting a head start. And they're getting a head start. And like I said, I think it's like April, I think it's like August 18th or so that the playoffs would start. And, you know, you're playing 4 out of 7 series. Like we talked about, the NFL is going to compress the preseason. But by the time they start, the NBA is going to be into its second round, you know, getting closer to the conference finals. And so I do think that there's going to be more direct competition there. But I also think the NFL may want to distinguish itself by allowing fans in. But let's be straight, guys. Like, you know, it's different for I mean, except for the fact that you're outdoors, which obviously I know for the spread of the virus is not considered as dangerous maybe as being at American Airlines Arena. But you also got 3 to 4 times as many people that would populate that. And I know there's been discussion about 25% capacity and all the rest of that. I don't know how they do that. So,
no, and you also open up it up for the possibility of stupidity. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. All the people are, even if you do the capacity issue, the people are gonna pack together in the closest seats, or they're gonna move around and stuff like that. I mean,
and how do you police that? Like,
how do you collectively police all those people and try and keep them all spaced out?
Especially alcohol guys. Like, they're going to serve alcohol through the third quarter because
you'd have to tarp the seats. Essentially, you'd have to tarp 2 seats and then allow one, you know, and have one that's untarped or something, and then hope that they don't just start untarping and you know, whatever. It'd be a mess. I mean, the one thing that I'm looking at is right now, the Arizona governor just sent down some directive, I think, about gatherings, and it's like for the next 30 days, right. And you know, legitimately so, because Arizona is you know, going through hell right now, and training camp is supposed to open in like 29 days. I thought I read. So it's like, wait a minute. Wait a minute. This actually is now already, like, orders are coming in today that are impeding on the NFL's schedule. And that's not going to stop. That's not going to stop. I mean, if you look at the way that the virus or the cases, at least, are exploding, and as well as hospitalizations exploding in most states, we don't have the hospitalization data, the same hospitalization data in Florida as they do in other states. But the way that it's going in places like Texas and Arizona, not so much California yet, but you know, it's not going to stop. And so other states are going to kind of follow. It's almost like we've got just enough time for some of those other states to start hitting their stride. Because once you have the 3 biggest states in the country, which would be Texas, Florida, and California, no particular order, going parabolic with the cases, there's no hope for the rest of the country to avoid doing the same thing. It's like being dragged down by half of the Titanic once it broke. You know, it's going to happen. Even New York,
which is, and Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, just floated, I think it was today, the idea of shutting down again for 3 weeks.
Oh, he didn't float it. I think he ordered it, didn't he?
He ordered it for 75% of the state.
Yeah.
And the thing was, when we had these conversations about on our podcast 5 on the Floor about 6 weeks ago, and this question was actually asked of Adam Silver, was the when it was clear that there's no federal leadership, and I know we don't want to have a political discussion tonight, but there's no federal leadership on this. So it came down to the states. And at the time, like 6 weeks ago, you had Cuomo in New York and Newsom in California and some others basically saying no sports. And then Cuomo came off of it a little bit. And then Newsom eventually came off of it. But like you said, because we didn't solve the problem and now the problem is going to be worse than it even was before, you are going to have this pushback where you're going to have certain states that just say no. And I think that is, you know, I hate to say it because I live in Florida, as do the two of you. We live in 3 different locations. I mean, I think part of the reason that the NBA went to Orlando, of course, was Disney, and you know, Disney is a rights holder with the NBA, and so
well, let's also not forget that Florida was doing well. right?
No, it was doing well, but it was doing well. Well, I know, and I know DeSantis, you know, threw his hands up and, you know, come at me, and now look what happened. But I also think part of it, beyond the Disney part, Chris, is that they also knew that DeSantis was going to be one of the last governors in the country to shut everything down.
That's fair.
And so I think that, you know, if you were going to go into, you know, if, let's say, because look, they don't have the same complex at Disneyland in California, but you could have found a complex in California to do what the NBA is doing in Florida. You could have partnered with Disney in some way out there, or they have plenty of partners in LA. I mean, basically the NBA is basically based in LA now. Okay. They could have done it there, but there might've been a concern that Newsom would actually shut down the state. We knew DeSantis wasn't going to do that. And so, They came to a bubble within a bubble. I mean, Florida is a bubble within a bubble in terms of common sense. And so the NBA has basically decided to put it here. And, you know, what everybody says, be damned, we're going to force this through. Now, we all know, again, that Roger Goodell's concern for his players does not match his concern for his owners. And so I think the leagues are very different in that way. And I cannot really foresee a circumstance where Roger Goodell shuts down the NFL season. I just don't think it's going to happen. Might he say that it's not worth putting fans in the stands and let's just make the money off TV for 1 year? I think that's possible.
Yeah, I think that's probably more likely. And as far as Gavin Newsom, he originally was mandating a bunch of things. Then he got a bunch of pushback from a few places in his state, which are a bit more conservative, namely in San Diego. Mm-hmm. And he allowed his municipalities to make their own decisions. In Ron DeSantis's case, he's taken Republicanism to a new level and deciding that all the municipalities have full autonomy. Mm-hmm. And some of them are forcing their own agenda upon him. So in here in Dade County, as of right now, if there was training camp tomorrow, I know it's not in Dade County, it's in Broward County and Davie. But if the Dolphins were to train tomorrow in Dade County, they couldn't. Because here in Dade County, the commission already has shut down gatherings of over 50 people. So yeah,
it's definitely going to be local. It's definitely, I mean, we'd probably have the same concern here in Hillsborough County in Tampa with the Buccaneers, because, you know, the Hillsborough County, I think, especially city of Tampa, I think is a little bit more willing to do these things even than Hillsborough County. But yeah, it's got to be a big concern because they've shown themselves willing to enact those sorts of orders. And I just think that, you know, the NFL may have the position that we want to do this hell or high water, but I mean they're going to have those decisions made for them by locations.
They might. The other thing to consider too, we talk about Dade, and I know you say, you know, the Dolphins train in, well, at least for one more year, they train in Davie as opposed to training in Miami Gardens. But the other thing to consider is every time that Dade has made a decision, Broward has followed it. Mm-hmm. And so, because, you know, again, I mean, there really is no distinction between the counties. I mean, even the stadium is literally on the county line. And so I think, you know, what you see is, yeah, you know, and what's actually been interesting is that a lot of the politicians making the decisions to close down in Dade are Republicans, actually. They're not, I mean, unlike Broward, which is completely Democratic, and, you know, obviously there's a big Republican Cuban population that votes in Dade. And so there have always been, as Alfredo, I mean, there have always been, you know, Republicans in leadership in Dade County. Mm-hmm. And those are some of them, like him and as like, that are shutting down. Well,
you have to understand, this is a state full of elderly people. And yes, this is, I mean, they're the vulnerable crowd. And what you see, like what you consistently see across polling lines and demographics, is that the older you are, the higher the age group you're in, the more willing you are to engage in more shutdowns. If there's a so-called second wave, which is ridiculous because we're already in the second wave / first wave / whatever wave. You know, the older you are, the more willing you are, to the point where I think it was the last one I saw was something like a plus 57 differential with everybody older than 55. Right. Mm-hmm. Everybody older than 55 favored shutdowns over not shutdowns by like plus 57, which is just absolutely ludicrous. And you know that in this state, the older crowd are largely Republican conservative. So right. What you have is a state that, you know, yes, you would think that because the state is so conservative, they'd be, no, let's keep the economy open. We have to keep the economy open, but it's also really old. And so it's really going against that. And that's why you have this overwhelming, I mean, that's why the locations are going to do it for DeSantis. And that's, I think he's trying to keep his rep with the higher ups stainless, but he's also leaving it up to the locations, and they're going to do it for him.
Well, he wants to run for president eventually, and I think that's part of it. But
yeah, and the way you do that is by not pissing anybody off and making like right. no decisions.
Right. But I have a question for you guys, because I want to bring this back to the NFL side, because, you know, I don't want to hijack this as an NBA podcast. But obviously, you know, I've covered both leagues, and so the mechanics of both leagues are very different. Like I said, the politics are different. The audiences are different. You know, the black players in the NBA have much more power than they do in the NFL. You know, we've been having these debates on Five on the Floor, and I know my co-host Alphonse Sidney feels pretty strongly about this, you know, that maybe the NBA shouldn't even play under the circumstances, you know, and not just COVID, but also, you know, everything that's going on with, you know, the push for equality in the country and everything along those lines. I'm just curious for your thoughts on, A, how should the NFL handle the other stuff, because we know that Roger Goodell has not typically handled that in a way that has really pleased anybody, right?
Yeah.
He hasn't pleased really the conservatives who felt that he should have been stronger on the players who were kneeling, etc. But I mean, the NBA players are probably all going to kneel before the national anthem in game. I mean, there's going to be an example set for the NFL. I mean, you've got you know, NBA players living together for 3 months in you know, high-end dorms, okay, with really without their families for the most part, with nothing to really do except basketball, you know, NBA 2K, and, you know, talk about, you know, what's going on in the country. I mean, there's going to be stuff that
they are building pubs on the floors that these teams are going to be on, by the way. Just so you
know. No, of course. But other than that, okay.
Well, they're calling it player lounges. So.
Yeah, well, I know, but it's not going to be like it is a normal circumstance where the guys are out on the road, okay? I mean, I did that with them for 20 years, so I know what that looks like. But I would just say, like, there's going to be stuff that comes out of here that I think is going to make the NFL uncomfortable, because they're not going to want it. They don't want Kaepernick too, right? How do you think that they handle that?
Well, I think, okay, so how does the NFL handle this? The big hurdle for me isn't really the anthem, you know, or the protests, or and I'm not calling it an anthem protest because I know it's not an anthem protest. So I don't think that that's an issue. I think the NFL has essentially rolled over a little bit on that one, and they're gonna let the players speak and let the players have their voice, and I don't suspect that's going to be a problem. The big problem is still COVID to me, and that's you know, we're gonna see with the NBA, and they're gonna be paying attention, because it's not just the fans in the stand thing. Here's the test. Here's the test. You get a rash of infections in a locker room. What happens? You know, one of the teams in the NFL, you know, it's clear, and the experts have been clear on this. I've heard, you know, Dr. Fauci say this, you know, if it's one player that tests positive in the locker room, okay, you know, that's one thing. If it's three players, then you have a lot more than three players. You have an entire infection in that locker room, and you know, you just haven't detected it all yet. So what happens when, I mean, this is like back when the NBA actually shut down, one player tested, Rudy Gobert tested positive, and it was like, whoa, you know, pullback immediate. I mean, we still haven't seen a sports franchise get punched in the mouth by COVID and then keep going. So that's what I'm keying in on. That's what I'm looking for or looking at. And the NBA might set the precedent, might set the example of how that goes, But what happens with an NFL team when they get a locker room infection and it's like, you know, yeah, we got these three players testing positive. We're expecting probably 5 to 15 more or something like that to test positive. I mean, what do you do with not just that team, but the entire league? Because they're all playing each other. I mean, what happens? Like, I'm looking for that. Like, that's, you know, that's even more pressing than the fans in the stand things, because that gets to the heart of, can you even put a product on television for you to have these enormous ratings? And I do think there's going to be enormous ratings, you know, in the balance if they're able to go. So, I mean, that's the big question to me. That's the big thing that we're just going to have to wait and find out. But I think that the NFL really thinks, and it goes back to the dynamic you're talking about. I believe in choice to some extent, and people think that I've gotten political on this, and I've not really gotten political on this. I believe in data, I believe in analysis, and I also do believe in choice. So I think that these professionals that get paid have the right to make decisions for themselves. I think that the league has a right to make some decisions for themselves. I don't believe they necessarily have the right to endanger others. So I would be very protective about, you know, who attends these games and who precautions everybody is taking, but especially masks and so on and so forth. But yeah, I do to some extent believe in choice. It's just that I'm forecasting this. I'm not prescribing, I'm forecasting, I'm predicting, and I'm saying they're going to get punched in the mouth. What's going to happen next? They're going to shut down. I kind of think that they're going to fold. I kind of think that they're going to say we can't do this anymore.
I don't think so, and I think the NBA is already setting a precedent for that. I mean, on the conference call the other day with Silver, he and Michelle Roberts were basically celebrating that there were only 16 infections. Like you said, like they shut down a whole league because of one guy in Utah. You know, and now there are 16, and they're like, we thought it was going to be a lot higher. I think.
Yeah, but they're not in camp yet.
No, I understand. I understand that, but they're going to be isolated. See, that's the thing. This is, I mean, the NFL can't put everybody in a bubble, right? It's much harder. I think the challenges for the NFL are much greater than the NBA for some of the reasons you're mentioning. One, there's just more people. I mean, you know, Eric Spoelstra was talking today about how he's to decide which 35 people are going to be allowed to go to Orlando. He's leaving. They have to leave people at home. I mean, they've got 17 players, which is their whole roster, and they get to take the G League guys. And they've got 18 coaches or staffers, and that's it. Mm-hmm. Now, the NFL, I mean, 35 is two-thirds of the roster, not even. And that doesn't include, you know, 16 coaches or whatever, plus, you know, executives, scouts, trainers, massage therapists. I mean, you're talking 90, 100, 110?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a totally different – it's a much greater challenge for the NFL, I think. And yet I don't know. I haven't heard –
But that's all the more reason why I think it's going to fold. It's going to – they might give it the old college try, but there's going to be some – punch in the face moment when they can't go on with this. That's what I think this is heading for. You know, I'm putting on my prognostication glasses and trying to look down the road. And that's kind of where I see what I see happening, because I haven't seen evidence yet of the iron will to absorb the blows and continue on. Yes, I know the NBA has had 16 players test positive. They're not in camp yet. What happens when they're in camp with one another and three or four of their locker room test positive, which means that basically everybody that's in camp with them has it, you know, or has been exposed to it. Not everybody has it, but everybody's been exposed to it. I mean, that's the real test. And we haven't seen that yet. We haven't seen that from any sport yet. Mm-hmm. And so the NBA has a chance to try and be the first. But that doesn't mean it's going
to go. Well, MLB is going to be the first, right? I mean, NHL. MLB is going to be the first, and you know they have their own set of challenges. But
I pay less attention to MLB than.
Well, no, so does the country right now, because they squandered their entire opportunity. But I do think with the NBA's plan, you know their plan is they're going to test and they're going to quarantine and they're not going to let anybody back in the bubble. until they're clean, and they're not going to let anybody out of the bubble and come back in the bubble. So their feeling is that they can basically contain this and have this little world within a world where nobody gets it, even if some initially were going to report with it. I don't know how the NFL provides similar containment. I just don't, just based on the numbers, based on the nature of the game, based on the fact that you're playing in a bunch of different stadiums and traveling. I mean, this report, I was at Pro Football Talks, one of the reports that had that some teams are considering flying day of game. I mean, okay.
Wow.
I mean, think about that, okay? You're talking about a sport that is basically 3 hours of car crashes, and you're going to have them jet-lagged players coming off a plane, going to a stadium. And so that's the thing that I don't think enough people have talked about. The health risk that is not COVID, okay? The guys who are going to suffer career-ending injuries because the circumstances have changed so much. Athletes are creatures of habit in terms of the way they prepare, the way they train. And now, you know, the NBA is doing things. The NBA's change is that it's a clock change, right? 3 months off. Okay, now we got to get you back in shape. But if the NFL is going to do things like take guys and bring them off a plane, I mean, the NFL is already being inhumane to its players by having Thursday night games. Okay, like now you're going to bring players straight off a plane to a field? I mean, these are the kinds of things that I think, you know, you have major players who end their careers that way. And the other thing I will say, Chris, that is concerning, you know, the NBA is trying to finish a season. They're trying to give their their fans some closure. The NFL is starting a season. If the NFL starts and 3 or 4 weeks into it says, we can't do it, there's going to be a lot of pissed off NFL fans who are like, why did I even start bothering with this? We'll never know what happens. It's a different aim than just because of the calendar. It's not the NFL's fault, but it's a different aim than the NBA has, which is, okay, we want the money. That's first, second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth. But also, we want to give our fans some closure to this season. At least that's a noble effort. The NFL starting and 3 weeks later ending is not going to come off very well. It's a really tough challenge for the league.
And it for lack of, you know, forgive the pun, it's going to be used as a political football too. Mm-hmm. And that's the sad thing in some ways, but you know, that's probably what you have to look forward to.
And we already had yesterday, ESPN had a boxing card in the middle of the week, and there was a little known fighter. He's pretty good. He actually won his fight. He lost a tooth during the fight. Joshua Vargas. We had our first example of bubble enforcement. His father, who is his trainer, stepped from the floor where all the fighters were quarantined down to the casino the night before the fight. He was kicked out of the bubble, and they forced all the fighters and everybody that was in quarantine to test all over again. So that begs the question, the bubble enforcement for this NBA season and eventually for the NFL season, how is that going to go? Because if one guy breaks it,
it's going to be hard.
Doesn't he essentially destroy the entire process of having a bubble? Doesn't he basically end the bubble?
Just an example of the logistical nightmare that stands in front of us. Which brings us back to Ethan, your question, should we bother even trying? Should we get everybody's hopes up? And you know, I don't know the answer to that. I won't pretend to. But I will say this. I'm more agnostic about whether the NFL tries this and whether the NBA tries this than I am about whether college football tries this.
Yes,
because
that's a different deal.
At least the dynamic that you talked about where the NBA players are, they're entitled to half of the revenue and they got to worry about salary cap being reduced by 30% if they don't finish the season and stuff like that. None of that applies to the college football players. And there is no bubble with respect to college football players. There can't be, you know, they're not paid. They're students. They have to, you know, if the universities are open, if they're classes, then they're going to be part of it. And I don't see how, I mean, Christ, you see the number of college football players that have already tested positive from one team. you know, no, there's no way. There just can't be any way.
Yeah. I'm with you. When we come back, I promise we will talk football. But first, a word from a sponsor. Let me introduce you to another sponsor to the podcast, U-Brake Wheel Repair and Remanufacturing Company. Tired of your wheels? Give your car a new and refreshed look by powder coating them a new color. Even make it Heat, Hurricanes, or Dolphins colors. Wheels faded and scratched? Renew them with our in-house wheel refinishing. They'll also repair cracked and bent rims while also offering in-home service. They also offer powder coating and full metal finishing of many other metal items such as outdoor furniture. U-Brake Wheel Fix has 15 years experience based right here in North Miami. You can check out a gallery of their work on Instagram at U, that's the letter U, Brake Wheel Fix. That is U-Brake Wheel, W-H-E-E-L, Fix. For information, call 305-748-0112, or you can also visit them on the web at ubreakwheelfix.com. That number again is 305-748-0112. And we're back. And after thrilling you for 45 minutes on COVID talk and NBA talk, we're going to talk a little football finally. And we never, you know, we haven't gotten any news on the football front for weeks. But this week, everybody has a load in their pants because Cam Newton just signed with the New England Patriots. Ethan, does it matter at all?
I mean, does it matter? I think it matters in the context of what the Patriots' objective is right now, because it appeared during this offseason that they may have been comfortable kind of sinking towards the bottom a little bit, which I thought was going to be challenging with their culture. I mean, it's difficult for teams, organizations with great culture, whether they're, you know, we can talk about whether it's a cheating culture or not, which is probably something else we should discuss. But certainly they've had a winning culture, you know.
Well, they just got find $1 million.
They just got it. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. That they dropped the Cam Newton news on the exact, and not just the same day, the same hour that happened. I'm sure that was a coincidence. But I mean, organizations that have, you know, good cultures, whether it's the Patriots or the Steelers or the Spurs or the Heat or any of those, you know, it's difficult to sink to the bottom because you know it's very easy when you're the Sacramento Kings or the Arizona Cardinals to do that. But it's a little bit harder when you're an elite organization. And so I never really bought into the idea that the Patriots were going to go full tank this year. I know that the reports are all that they really like Jared Stidham. I don't know what to make of that. But, you know, it didn't look like they had the best quarterback situation in the division, you know, at the very least. Now, you know, if you're bringing in Cam Newton, I mean, on a one-year deal, a one-year prove-it deal, you're basically giving him a chance to recover and lead you to some wins and earn another contract. And so if that's the case, it reframes the Patriots debate a little bit. Maybe Belichick likes his roster more than we thought. And maybe Belichick, you know, said something that I think, Alfredo, you've been saying for a while, which is that his quarterback wasn't that good last year. And if he gets, you know, pretty good quarterback play this year, even if it's a little different in terms of the style that it comes in, that it may actually be better than it was last season. And so then you start to think, okay, are the Patriots really done? They still have a pretty elite coaching staff, even with everybody they lose. You know, they still have, you know, what should be a pretty damn good defense, even with some players that they've lost. And, you know, they don't seem to have a lot at the skill spots, particularly at receiver. But you've got Edelman. You've got Sanu, who seemed to be pretty happy about this move. And, you know, he's made do with less sometimes in terms of Belichick. So I think it maybe does reframe the conversation a little bit, whereas a division that looked like it was trending all the way to the Bills with maybe the Dolphins another year away, you know, maybe looks like the Patriots can be competitive again if they can get good Cam.
You know, I think that this was good news for I'm not trying to be Pollyanna-ish here. Because obviously Cam is a competitor and he's going to be hard to play against for the Miami Dolphins. But I kind of think that the Dolphins are going to be in competition for this division crown with the Buffalo Bills, and they're a good team. And I think that the Patriots have maybe a little bit of a stronger record of beating the Buffalo Bills than they do the Dolphins. I mean, it just seems like we get them, or we end up nailing them, you know, not every now and then, but like every year, one of the games. So I'm trying to think of this, like, you know, who gets hurt more? Does Buffalo get hurt more by this, or do the Dolphins get hurt more by this? I think it's Buffalo. I honestly don't think it's the Dolphins. So, yeah, I think that if this development means two losses for the Bills from the New England Patriots this year, then that's going to help us more than it hurts us. And also, I did buy that the Patriots might be in line to try after Trevor Lawrence. And the reason
they lost 9 starters and decided to replace them with nobody.
Yeah, and they were going to go into the season with Jared Stidham at quarterback.
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry, that doesn't work.
And they decided that the worst receiver core in the NFL was just fine. Like, we'll just go with Julian Edelman and nobody else, because that worked so well.
Who's gonna play like 4 games? Julian, yes, Edelman will, and then, you know, and now he'll play even less because of COVID. You know, I think that there was a chance. There was definitely a chance. I mean, think about, you know, they might have started out. Belichick and that staff are always so good at adjusting as the season goes on. They might have gone into camp. They're gonna be aware of what they're bringing to the table. They're gonna teach and do all the things that they normally do. But when it gets to the game, you've got Bill Belichick. This is your triumvirate. It's Bill Belichick at the very top, and underneath him are Josh McDaniels, who's shady as fuck, and Bill Belichick's son as the defensive coordinator. You're going to tell me that that trio would be beyond throwing games on purpose?
Yeah.
Talk about a tight-knit trio that could totally conspiratorially throw games on purpose and not let anybody, because you can't let, that's the key about doing this throwing games thing, you can't let other people know about it, right? Because then it'll get out. Mm-hmm. But I mean, if it's Bill Belichick and his son and Josh McDaniels, Josh shady as fuck McDaniels, then yeah, I think that that could have actually happened. But you know who's not going to be in on it? Cam Newton.
Yeah.
He is not going to be in on it. And unless they just like go to Jared Stidham, because they're pulling that Patriot way crap where it's like, oh, he's just not getting the system, you know, Cam Newton, and everybody, and then, you know, the Patriots fans are like, I'd rather lose with Stidham than win with Newton, you know, like, that could happen, and I guess you have to, you know,
in that town, handicap that. Absolutely happen. But Chris, I'll ask you this, then I guess I keep asking myself this question since the signing. I mean, I thought he'd end up in New England simply because it was the last place left, and he was too good to be sitting out there. I mean, if he's healthy, if he's even remotely healthy, he should be somewhere. But yes, with that being said, what is the incentive for New England? I mean, I think part of this is, as much as I understand what you're saying, Alfredo, he let 9 starters walk, he didn't replace any of them. I think part of this is just a big prove it show for Bill Belichick. Likes this kind of challenge. The year that he didn't have Brady and Cassell, and Matt Castle won 11 games, and you know, the Dolphins won the division, but it had to do it on the last day of the season, happened to be in that locker room in the Meadowlands when they beat the Jets and Favre. But, you know, they won 11 games with Matt Castle. And I kind of feel like sometimes, you know, Bill Belichick is the guy who on Madden football puts it on, you know, the hardest level possible just to prove that he can do it. And I almost feel like he's challenged himself. And now he's got a quarterback that he can actually work with. And the idea of, you know, winning without Tom while gutting your roster, I think in a perverse way, it kind of appeals to him. And he also knows that, let's be honest, the division is still a little bit of a shit show. I mean, the Jets are very, very barren of talent, don't have the best coach. And
they're
the
like, they're like down and going further down.
Further down. Okay. And
Sam Dolphins, Darnold, for whatever reason, picks the Dolphins to throw all his interceptions against.
Yeah, but there's no talent on that roster. And the one guy that there is talent, you know, the safety, Jamal Adams, wants to leave. The Bills, I think, have a lot of talent, but nobody trusts the Bills ever. And I don't know if you can trust the quarterback.
And they're very, yeah, and they're very Josh Allen-centric. And I don't know if that's a good thing.
And the Dolphins are ascendant, but they're
you don't
they're
think
clearly
that Josh Allen centric, Chris?
No. I think that they're defense centric, and I think they're running game centric. I mean, I don't think they're you know all Josh Allen.
And how many rushing yards did their quarterback have last year?
Well, that's you know he's part of the running game.
Okay, well there you go.
Anyway, go on, Nathan.
Yeah, but I guess the overall point is, I mean, if you're Belichick and you're assessing the division. And you look at the Dolphins and you know, you have a history with Brian Flores. You can see what the Dolphins are building. But your assumption is they're a year away. You look at the Bills and you don't really, trust the Bills. And, you know, you've beaten up on the Bills historically. And, you know, the Jets are shit and they're coached by Gase. Okay. You look at that and you say, okay, if I can get a quarterback, I can restore him. I don't know that he'd be the long-term answer there anyway, but he's going to be motivated. I've gutted the rest of my roster, but I'm going to let some young guys play, and I'm going to prove I don't need Tom, and I don't even need some of the guys that were here. To me, that's the only reason to do this, because yeah. I thought, like you did, that they were going to go for Trevor Lawrence, but you're not doing that with Cam Newton. He's not bad enough, even at his worst, to do that. So I just don't think that's – it's like Ryan Fitzpatrick, except Newton has a higher upside. So I just don't think that's happening.
But what if they change gears? Like, what if – so what if they – you know, everything that you said, you know, we don't have Brady anymore. He was holding us back. He wasn't having a good year and stuff like that. Now they're going to try this with Cam Newton. What if they get in there, they get through camp a little bit, they, you know – got their two little preseason games. They start playing some regular season games. Say the season isn't canceled by COVID. And they just discover, well, you know, we're just not a very good football team. What do they do then? Do they just go ahead and go with Stidham and tank the rest of the season? I think there's a fair chance that they would, that they go ahead and do that.
I could see that. I know I could see them doing that. I just think, you know, then the question becomes, how does Cam handle that? Mm-hmm. You know,
well, that's exactly.
But then your point, you know, but then it's like, okay, he's on a 1 year. I mean, you know, he'll be out of here in 8 weeks anyway. I mean, if you start, and the other thing is that Patriots teams typically start a little slower. As you know, he doesn't put everything in right away in training camp and doesn't sort of put other things in until the first thing's perfected. And typically, you know, they've performed better in November, December than they have in September. I mean, you could start, I don't know, say you start, you know, 2-4, you know, 1-4, something like that. Then yeah, I mean, then you say, okay, we're going to go to Stidham and let him ride out the last 10 games. And if Cam's not happy being a backup, okay, he's gone after that. But I don't think they're doing it for that reason. I think they're doing it because he thinks he can steal this division without Brady, and who he didn't want 2 years ago when he wanted Garoppolo to ascend. And, you know, now he's going to do it with this other guy. And so I do think he'll stick with Cam for a certain degree. And also I think, you know, to pick a quarterback that is stylistically completely 180 from Brady and to try to make it work with him, it does add another notch in Belichick's cap if he can get, you know, Cam back to somewhere, not MVP form, but, you know, at least halfway back to where he was before.
All right. Yeah, I agree. I agree with everything you guys have said. As far as Cam, the player, if he's healthy, and everybody keeps repeating the same thing, he's a top 15 quarterback. And in my opinion, he would be better than what Tom Brady was last year in New England. The thing is that if he doesn't have that running component, he's essentially Ryan Tannehill in Miami. That's what his ceiling is as a passer. So, but the running side of it makes him, I think, a top 15 quarterback and makes New England right back where they've always been, 11, 12 wins, 10 wins. But that's if you get 2018 Cam or MVP Cam, 2015 Cam, that type of Cam. But you get 2016 or 2019 or 2017 Cam. those guys just weren't very good players.
But Alfredo, can you make the case that I mean, the Dolphins have the best quarterback situation in the division right now, right?
I agree. Yeah, I think so.
I think that foots. I think there is an underestimation of Josh Allen out there. If you're a Buffalo Bills fan, you have reason to think that Josh Allen is a good quarterback and probably, well, you know, it depends on Cam Newton's health, right? If Cam Newton, his arm was falling off last year and it was painfully obvious. If he's at full health, it's one thing. But if his arm, he signed for $7.5 million. If he's a $7.5 million player, then the Buffalo Bills fans are saying, well, we have the best quarterback in the division right now. I think that's fair. You give that to them. You say, all right, Tua hasn't thrown a single pass yet. I'll give that to you. But going forward in the future, clearly the Miami Dolphins have the reason to believe that they've got the highest ceiling there at that quarterback position. One thing I will say about the Cam Newton, New England offense, Josh McDaniels thing is to watch out for is, you know, Josh McDaniels without Tom Brady, spotty. Okay, let's just say that that's a little spotty because, you know, I happen to remember the year when Josh McDaniels was offensive coordinator with the Rams with Sam Bradford at quarterback, and they had the 32nd ranked offense in the league. And Sam Bradford isn't a great quarterback, but he's not Tim Tebow either. So I think that you go from – there's a risk there. There's a risk there that and Josh McDaniels thinking that Cam Newton can – or Jarrett Stidham, for that matter, can run his offense. And, you know, I'm just not sure. I mean, this isn't like with Matt Castle because, you know, back when Matt Castle took over – I mean, he took the keys to a Corvette from Tom Brady. I mean, it was a record-breaking offense with – you know, Randy Moss and Wes Welker and the primes and, you know, everything going perfect and right. And, you know, he took the keys of a Corvette and he drove it like a BMW. Like,
yeah, and remember what happened to
not even a high end BMW.
Remember what happened to the Dolphins that year when they played the Patriots with Matt Castle here in Miami. Mm-hmm. And Matt Castle brought that offense over here and we had a top five defense and a great running game. And they hung, like, what, 46 points?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. Yeah. So it's not the same thing. Josh McDaniels has got less offensive weaponry and a less polished offense that he's handing over to a new quarterback, and I think he's a little bit spotty, and you might find out some things about – so the key is what I'm saying is Cam Newton, I hope, wins them some games, particularly against the Buffalo Bills, gets them out of the running that Trevor Lawrence thing, which, you know, God, I hope so. But I still don't think that they're going to do well. Yeah. You know, I'm not forecasting that.
All right. We got some Twitter questions here. And the first one is Miguel Perez at Miguel Bahamas. And he writes, excluding Tua, which player? And I got to say, I read this question and I was a bit stumped. So maybe I'm forgetting somebody. He writes, excluding Tua, which players drafted in the last 2 years by the fans have the best chance of becoming a consistent Pro Bowl performer over the next 5 years? Ethan.
In the last 2 years.
Yes. Wait. So last year's draft, this year's draft.
Let's pull this up just so that, you know, let's.
I'm going to try to do this top ahead because I
okay. You know, I'm going to pull it up.
Try to improve my Dolphins bona fides here. Right. I guess you have to start and debate whether Christian Wilkins is going to be a Pro Bowler or not. And, you know, at that position, it's difficult to stand out. You know, I'm going to say probably no on that one, you know, although there were certainly promising signs. I think in this particular draft, I don't know that anybody else would project that high. I mean, the safety out of Texas, the offensive lineman. The Dolphins drafted practically this year. And I like their draft, but I don't know if there's Pro Bowlers in there necessarily. I'm going back to last year too. That's a tough one, man. I mean, I think the guy who's got the Pro Bowl potential of the players that have been added the past 2 years, the first year players, I would go off the board and say Preston Williams.
Yeah, he wasn't drafted. But
right, I know that. But I'm just saying, I mean, I know on draft night you had him as the second best player they picked last year or in 2019.
Not whole offseason.
Right, the whole offseason. I would go off the board and say him. I don't, again, I think it depends what you think of Wilkins as a potential Pro Bowler. I think he's going to be a really solid player for them for a long time and a team leader, but I don't know that I would put him there.
Well, I'm looking at it, okay? I'm looking at the last two drafts. From 2019, Christian Wilkins, I guess, is the best candidate for this. Mm-hmm. Rest are just either role players or guys that are out of the league or going to be out of the league in a year. From this past draft, I think Robert Hunt has that Juwan James vibe where everybody in the league likes him and is willing to pay him $10, $12, $14 million a year, but we particularly don't want to keep him. So that's a good player. That's a Pro Bowl performer. I think Juwan James made one Pro Bowl. Out of the rest of the guys, man, I guess if Austin Jackson pans out, of course. But Raekwon Davis, even if he's a really, really good player, he's going to be a Randy Starks type, which is not the type that makes a bunch of Pro Bowls and is a signature player. So, you know, they drafted a lot of guys that can be solid performers, but as far as star potential, I guess Robert Hunt is the only one. I don't know.
Well, there's nobody else in 19. I mean, beyond Wilkins, I mean, it's not going to be Michael Dieter. It's not going to be Van Ginkle.
No.
You guys are missing the whale. You guys missed the boat. You know, Chandler Cox, he's the next he's the next Reagan Maya.
You know, I'll give you one under the radar.
Or not.
No, don't give me one.
Perry becomes Danny Woodhead. I'll say.
Okay. Okay, but that's not perennial. That's not annual Pro Bowler. Pro Bowler.
Let's take it back a little bit while we're doing this.
No, it's the easy one. You guys are still missing the easy one. It's Noah Igbinoghene, the corner from Auburn. He's the guy with the Pro Bowl potential.
He's not even going to be a starter here, though.
Oh, yeah, he's not going to be a starter. Patrick Surtain wasn't going to be a starter when he was drafted.
But Terrell Buckley was ahead of him.
Look what he did. I mean, this is a player with tremendous potential. Let's not forget about this. He was a late starter, or he was a late convert onto the defensive side of the ball. And you watch him play, you watch him move. I mean, he's the son of like world class sprinters. Okay, so he's got all this speed on him. He can play in the slot. He can cover over the middle really well, and yet he's got the size and ability to play on the outside. And he's got the speed. He's got the aggressiveness on this kid is incredible, considering he'd only been playing on that side of the ball for like 2 years. With that kind of aggressiveness and that kind of just the feel that he had was amazing. I mean, he went toe to toe with what was vaunted as the most challenging receiving units maybe ever seen in college football with Alabama and LSU. And my God, that guy was confident as shit, and he wasn't intimidated by a single soul that he went across. I mean, this is an exciting pick. This is going to be, I said it on draft, like, you know, boom, boom, boom. The Dolphins grabbed guys that were at the top of the board for me at each of their positions. And that includes Robert Hunt. And I do believe that Robert Hunt is going to be good. But he might have a hard time being that annual Pro Bowler if he's the right tackle. You know, maybe it works out, maybe it doesn't. I don't know. But I think Noah Igbinoghene is the easy one that is being looked over right here at corner, because, you know, he has that type of skill set. And he's so new to the position that it's only going to get a lot better for him. And so, you know, I don't buy this crap like, you know, he's going to only be the third corner. And so, like, you know, how good can he be and stuff like that? Yeah, so was Surtain back in the day. I mean, but I think that this guy has that sort of potential, and you're really going to have to watch out for him.
I'm looking at the 2018 draft just for the hell of it. It ain't going to be Kalen Ballage. Unfortunately,
will you guys stop it with that shit already? I got to hear from Simon, and now I got to hear from you, Ethan.
Yeah, you do. Unfortunately, yeah. It's Minka, but not
just
here.
Pile it down. Pile it on. It's okay.
Unfortunately, it's Minka, but not here. But I'll throw this question at you since we're taking questions and we're still going here. Who has a better chance to be a Pro Bowler, Gesicki or Jerome Baker?
Well, I'm a big fan of Jerome Baker, but Chris is not. I've seen the
best. No. I love Jerome Baker. I don't like him in this system.
You don't like
him. I don't like his fit for this system. I think that he might be such a good player that he could sort of make it work anyway, but he wouldn't flower and become the player he could become. And I do believe he could be a really tremendous player in the NFL if he went to a different system. But in this one, I mean, there's a possibility he turns into a Gerard Mayo, and I've always said that, but you know,
what about Roosevelt Colvin? Would that suit you? Would that be?
No, he's not that kind of player. I don't think he's that kind of player.
No, not physical enough.
Yeah, I just don't think he can play those sorts of roles. I mean, he's noticeable,
but
he's great. He's a great player.
Mike Gesicki. Let's roll the clock back. His last six games last year. There's some star potential there. If he's that. And he can be that going forward. And Tua somehow, you know, makes him the BFF. Like, we could have something here. And yeah. he's essentially just a wide receiver. He's not a tight end
anymore. Right. That's what I'm saying. Right. I mean, he could be a 65 catch guy and make the Pro Bowl.
You don't get in the Pro Bowl as a tight end for blocking.
No.
You get in there by getting a bunch of touchdowns, and that's something you can do.
Highlight reels. That's how you get in.
Yeah.
And for all the people that think Chan Gailey doesn't ever use a tight end, I mean, you have to watch and look at the fact that Chan Gailey has coached Tony Gonzalez. You know, he's coached, Quincy Enunwa was actually when Chan Gailey was there, Quincy Enunwa was a tight end hybrid for him. And he also had, who was it? Scott Chandler up in Buffalo. Now, Scott Chandler was a real tight end, but he also had receiving talent, and Chan Gailey figured out how to get him the ball, and he got him the ball plenty. So Chan Gailey can use Mike Gesicki as a wide receiver or pseudo wide receiver or hybrid or whatever. And he can get him the ball if he's showing himself reliable enough. But, and that's all that Gesicki has to do. I mean, you can't compare Gesicki to the previous failure with Michael Agnew, because what Michael Agnew, he was supposed to be a receiving tight end because you knew it was sure as fuck wasn't a blocker. And he just never showed himself be very compelling as a receiver, but that hasn't been an issue for Mike Gesicki. He's put on the highlight reels really since his first days in camp as a rookie.
Mm-hmm.
He's shown those sorts of highlights to the fans, and then it wasn't happening in games at first. And then it was happening.
Featured him in not only in training camp, but in the first couple of preseason games, and then the season kicked off, and he was like, "All right, you know, we're just not going to use this guy."
Well, Adam Gase had some structural issues with how he liked to coach offense, and it really put Gesicki in some of the roles that you just don't want him. And so I think that there was a clash there. There was a clash between how Adam Gase, what kind of personnel groupings and formations he likes to call, and, you know, what Gesicki could do. And it just, it didn't work out, but I think it worked better last year. You've seen it in games with him. I think absolutely I'd go with him getting to be a Pro Bowler, you know, even next year before Jerome Baker, even though I do love Baker, this isn't the best system for him. But I think that Gesicki could make those highlights, and, you know, again, the right person throwing the ball, it's like he might have 65 catches, and if he's got 9 touchdowns in there or something like that, then hey, Pro Bowl here comes.
Yeah, and a couple of these Twitter questions basically answer themselves. Like Carlos Ortega at Cortega 24, he writes, player most likely to pull Devontae Parker this season, meaning a guy that's, you know, just a guy and then all of a sudden just blows up. I think we just answered it. It's Mike Gesicki, isn't it?
Yeah, kind of. I could see that. And I've talked about a lot of things could happen. This is going to be such – we don't know what's going to happen. Let's pretend the season happens. But this is all so much up in the air that you can imagine, you know, players in and out, like injuries, COVID, whatever. you know, I've said it many times. It wouldn't surprise me if this is the year that it's like you're watching Jakeem Grant play football and you're like, oh, I get it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's mm-hmm. and that's because of who I think is going to be throwing the ball. And I think the chances of Tua being a week one starter just went down by the fact that there's only two preseason games now instead of four. That's a key thing. But we are going to see Tua, I think, before long. And so I think that Tua is going to be at training camp. They're going to be on the same teams. Right, they're going to be on the second team together, and so Tua's already going. He's already, I think, he's already been throwing passes to him. But Tua's going to be throwing passes to him in training camp because they're going to be on the same squad a lot. And this is the guy that's going to remind him the most of Jerry Jeudy as far as the footwork and how quickly he can get open, how well he can get off the line, and how quickly he can get out of his breaks. And Tua is not going to be scared about the fact that he's only 5'7" or whatever. Because you know, the strike zone being smaller isn't an intimidating thing for a Tua Tagovailoa. So I think that the timing trumps the smaller strike zone. And so watch out, because those two could really hit it in stride if Tua overtakes Ryan Fitzpatrick at some point this season. And that could be the guy we come from.
All right. We gave you guys a really meaty episode. Okay, you really can't complain. This is an hour and 25 minutes you're going to get from us. Ethan, on the way out, tell our listeners what they can expect from Five on the Floor.
We're going to 5 days a week, 5 days a week. That probably will include our streaming show, which is every Thursday night on our YouTube channel. We've got over 3,000 subscribers on the YouTube channel. We do post 3 yards per carry there now also. So check that out. It's free. Just type in 5 Reasons Sports on YouTube and you'll find it. But we're going 5 days a week. We're going to be on Dash Radio also. So these are our two biggest properties in the network, 3 yards per carry and 5 on the Floor. And we're going to be going at the same time this year. So it should be a lot of fun.
All right. We will talk to you guys next week.
Thanks for listening to 3 yards per carry. You can subscribe via iTunes on Podbean or your usual podcast provider.